So I always thought that the subject matter for your new book would be a really great documentary. Can you talk about your new book and what drew you to the subject matter?
Sure. Well, the book's called Breakaway, and it's being published by Wiley and Sons, and it tells the story of a number of different Czechoslovakian and Soviet hockey players who, most of whom defected, some of whom came legally to North America during the Cold War. I'm from Montreal originally, and I'm an avid hockey fan, and have been really my whole life. And as I got older, I majored in political science at McGill University. And as I started, I guess maybe watching hockey a little bit more through that prism, you'd hear these stories that when you're a kid growing up, you don't understand, that you don't appreciate about what some NHL players had to do to get to the NHL, especially during the Cold War when they were playing for the Soviet national team or the Czechoslovakian national team. And I thought there would be, more than enough material for a book, which, as far as I could find, hadn't really been written, at least not the way I wanted to write it. So as I started making some phone calls and talking to some people, I did realize that there was quite a bit of espionage that went into bringing some of these players to North America. And then once they were in the NHL, the story obviously didn't end there. I mean, there was such an awesome transition that they had to make to a new culture and a new style of hockey and a new language, obviously. And as it turned out, there were plenty of great stories, and fortunately for me, plenty of people who were willing to share those stories.
And was there anybody you tried to get in touch with who didn't really want to talk about it?
Sure. I mean, fortunately, most of the people I did call were very generous and candid. There were, a few who I tried a few different ways to get in touch with and never really got an answer, either way. So, I mean, one in particular was Václav Nidomanský, who I tried through a few different people to get in touch with, and I never really heard back, and it became pretty apparent that he wasn't interested, especially when I interviewed other people about him. I mean, he was one of the first high-profile defectors, and as I spoke with people, including journalists in Slovakia, I kind of, they helped me put a bit more of a portrait of him together, and he seems over the years to have been pretty press shy, I guess you could say. And it's interesting, in talking to journalists who have spoken with him in Slovakia, he's really revered in that country and by those people. And so it's interesting to see these journalists that are trying to kind of understand why he might not be so candid or interested in sharing his story. But that's fine. I mean, I think for a lot of people that were involved in these stories, it wasn't all easy. It was a very difficult transition, and he and a few other people just I think have made it kind of clear over the years that it's just not something that they care to discuss publicly, and that's fine. That's their prerogative, and I accept that absolutely.
During your research for the book, did you learn about any players who tried to defect and weren't successful?
The whole behind the Iron Curtain when it came to these kinds of talk of defection or player movement, I mean, it was so secretive, even between teammates, because the risk of being discovered, they could be pretty dire. So, you could get in you could get in quite a bit of trouble if the government or the national program found out that you were trying to defect. So in many cases, you never knew players were planning on defecting until they successfully defected. They're always sort of, I don't know if they were urban legends, but there are always stories, back and forth about players that had tried and failed, athletes that had maybe even crossed the border, and special agents had been dispatched to get them and bring them back. Mm-hmm. You know, Rich Winter mentioned, he's a very prominent hockey agent, mentioned to me when he was helping Frank Musil defect that they went to UN refugee station, and they were told that just recently someone had been there trying to defect and had never been heard from again. Mm-hmm. So there were these sort of cautionary tales that no one knew all the details of. But no one really knows, who they were. And if you did, if you were planning on defecting and for whatever reason weren't able to do it, you certainly wouldn't go around telling people that you had tried and failed or that you were planning on it and had changed your mind, because there was no point in doing that. It just wasn't worth it.
So when you were doing research for this book, did you go over to Czech Republic and Slovakia and Russia to talk to people?
I didn't really have an opportunity to do that, unfortunately. I would have loved to do that, but I was very lucky to get in touch with some very helpful people who still live in Russia and the Czech Republic and Slovakia who were there and really provided some very helpful insight on the sports culture and the political culture at that time and also today. But I'd love if there's an opportunity maybe in the future for a similar book or a sequel or something, I'd love to have the opportunity to go there. I think it would be, I think there's probably still a lot more information out there that would be really interesting to unearth.
Yeah. I read the excerpt that you sent me today since the book isn't out yet. And when you're describing the games, I think it was 1968, 1969, and maybe even into the early 70s, those Czechoslovakia versus Soviet Union games. Did you,
right,
when you were kind of like recreating the atmosphere for those, did you have access to films of those, or did you just like kind of go by like written accounts of it?
I mean, there's some video available. Some of it's online. Some, not much is available through the International Ice Hockey Federation. Mm-hmm. Again, that's something else that I think I'd love to have an opportunity for a sequel, maybe to find a little more archival footage. But to be honest, just listening to certain players describe what some of those games were like, especially the Czechoslovakian players who just had this incredible deep-seated animosity towards the Soviets that was just born out of decades of, basically what they felt was an occupation, hearing them describe it, in some cases not even fully understanding why they hated the Soviets so much. They just knew that they hated them. Mm-hmm. It was a palpable kind of description that I hope I was able to kind of translate to the book.
Yeah, I just thought from the part I read today that maybe you had gotten your hands on complete films of it just because it was pretty, pretty descriptive,
Yeah. I mean, not complete films. I mean, I was able to find some videos of some of those games, especially that 1969 World Championship between the Czechoslovakia and Soviet Union. That video, those games are part of the history of the Czech Republic and Slovakia. That was a momentous moment for that country, for the country, which was Czechoslovakia at the time. And so that appears to be, that seems like that's kind of like some of the most replayed sports footage in the history of that country. Kind of like seeing a replay of the catch by Joe Montana or something in the United States. Like, mm-hmm. That's part of their sports history. So that stuff like that was a lot more accessible. But, again, hopefully there'll be an opportunity to find some more of that stuff.
Yeah. Could you, in the description of the book online, it lists about 7 or 8 players, pretty, big names in the hockey world who were guys who did defect in the 80s or early 90s. Can you just share a story of, like, just one of their stories, maybe if it was, like, Fedorov or Mogilny or Fetisov?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of them, so just picking one might be difficult. But
Or just one that sticks out,
Yeah, I mean, the one for me, and there's a lot of good ones. I mean, the one for me, I feel, at least just on a personal standpoint, I mean, the story of the Stastny brothers is just, I think, so compelling and just heart-wrenching at times, having these three brothers who were, you know, these huge hockey stars representing their country, representing the Slovakian people. And for the three of them, you know, one, you know, the oldest, Marian, who was married with children, and then the middle, Peter, who was married with a child on the way, and then the youngest, Anton, who was not married, without children, all in different moments of their lives. And, you know, for them to be, you know, at a tournament playing for their club, and basically, you know, Peter and Anton having to make this decision to defect to Quebec without telling their oldest brother and basically leaving their older brother behind. I mean, they did it to protect him in a way because he was older, he had a wife and children, and they knew there was no way he'd be able to bring his wife and children with him. So they knew that he'd rather be back in Czechoslovakia with his family than in Quebec, you know, Quebec, wondering what would happen to his family. But at the same time, just the, you know, I was able to speak to the brothers and hearing them describe, you know, hearing Peter describe the guilt that he felt having to make that decision to leave his older brother behind, you know, and then hearing Marian tell the story about what it felt like to be left behind. Mm-hmm. And basically having his hockey career end just like that because he was a target once his brothers defected. You know, I mean, there's plenty of good stories, but, you know, that was one that definitely stuck out. And then for Peter to describe the relief he felt a year later when Marian finally came and joined them in Quebec, just, you know, he described it as, you know, having a giant boulder just lifted off his shoulders, because it's something that, you know, literally weighed on him for, you know, so heavily.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously the book isn't out yet, but so I haven't had a chance to read it, but is there any, is there any Russian, like, was there a lot of Russian mafia, involvement in any of this, like in the early 90s or anything?
Well, it's out in Canada. I will point that out. It just came out in Canada. So
oh, it is,
anyone,
okay.
You know, yeah, so not on the United States just yet. And if anyone is listening to this in Canada, it is available on all retailers there. In terms of Russian mafia, I mean, what that, you know, that, and, you know, that's the kind of story that there are only so many details available because it all depends on how much a writer wants to risk getting into that research, I guess. But, I mean, that was, you know, more a phenomenon, a post-Cold War phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And I touch on it very briefly in the book because it was something that was in the news, again, after the Cold War, after the Soviet Union basically no longer existed. You know, this was a new country that was trying to establish a new infrastructure on every level. And so it was a prime opportunity for, you know, some enterprising criminals to maybe take advantage. I mean, I touched on it with some people. No one I spoke with really could speak to how prevalent, you know, the Russian mafia was and how involved it was in hockey and with hockey players. But you know, a couple of them basically hinted that, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some stories that came out in the news around that time in the early to mid 90s. But when it came to, you know, when it came to most of the stories in this book during the Cold War, I mean, the government was so, centrally controlled that, there was not nearly as much opportunity for the mafia at that time. It was really only something that happened after the Cold War ended.
Mm-hmm. So back to a general NHL question.
Sure.
Do you think any teams in the next several years are gonna move? And if so, who do you think might move and where do you think they might go? Because I know there's rumors, but it, just from somebody who's, you know, works for the league.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much I can comment about that either, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you know, I think the league's, you know, been pretty clear about the makeup of the league as it stands right now is how they'd like to see it remain. You know, the league in over the past few years, especially since the lockout, is, you know, has experienced tremendous growth, you know, and so I just think that, I mean, I will say that that is encouraging for all, you know, for the league and for its players and for the clubs in terms of who will move or, you know, will someone move? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really, you know, I can't speak to the business end of the National Hockey League too much, to be perfectly honest. You know, we cover the players and the teams and the action and the games, but but I don't know. I mean, I don't have as much to say, I guess, about the franchises and are they going to stay or are they going to go. I wish I could give you more about that, I guess, but, you know, there's just not much that I know about it, to be honest.
Totally different topic. What are some of your favorite hockey books?
I mean, the game is the hockey Bible, as far as I'm concerned. I grew up in Montreal, and I just think, you know, what Ken Dryden has been able to accomplish in his career, not just as a hockey player, but as a politician, as a writer, as a lawyer. I mean, it's pretty, it's pretty amazing. And I just, the way he's able to describe that team, you know, that Canadiens team, which is one of the great teams of all time. I think it's pretty impressive for someone who can provide that level of insight, you know, and as someone who grew up and is still a Canadiens fan, I mean, that is, that's a big one for me. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of, you know, that's the first one that comes to mind. I'm trying to think if there's any others.
That's kind of a biggie, yeah.
That is the biggie. I mean, I guess that's the easy answer, but that's the one I'd have to go with. I mean, it's just a great book, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a book in any sport where you could find that level of insight about a team and its players and the interaction that they have, you know. I can think of others, but I'd have to get back to you, I suppose.
So you mentioned you're a Montreal fan. How do you feel about the way that they're headed? As a fan?
I think most fans, and, you know, myself included, are, for the most part, pleased with the direction of the team. I mean, last season was obviously an unpleasant experience for most Canadiens fans, and hopefully was, you know, a complete aberration. We'll find out. You know, I think even last season, the people I would speak to in Montreal, as badly as the season would go, there was sort of this calmness to most of the fans. I don't think anyone felt like this was a team that had to be completely gutted and rebuilt. You know, there was a core there of, you know, great young players to build around, and the team's draft, for most people who've evaluated, was very good this year. They got Alex Galchenyuk with the third overall pick, who's a potential, he didn't play at all last year because of injury, but there's talk of him being a potential franchise player. You know, they signed Carey Price, you know, who's their franchise goalie, to a contract extension. Max Pacioretty signed an extension. He's a great, you know, great young power forward. And I think there is every expectation at this point that PK Subban, who's potentially a franchise defenseman, will sign, you know, a new contract. And so, you know, they can only get better than they were last year. So as long as they're getting better, you know, right now, I mean, I don't know if Marc Bergevin, the new general manager of the team, is still in the honeymoon phase, but he's, you know, the people following the team seem to be, you know, pleased with the work he's done so far. There's still plenty more work to do, but in terms of moving forward and the team improving, I think there's a lot of people looking forward to the next season and forgetting about last season as quickly as possible.
Do you think it's important for the fans up there, and maybe this has changed over the years, but do you think it's important for a French Canadian to be kind of running the show up there for them? Or does it not matter?
It is important. Yeah, I think it is still important. I think, I don't know, the situation with Randy Cunningworth last season was very interesting. You know, for you know, they fired their coach less than halfway through the season, and they hired Randy Cunningworth, who is an Anglophone who admitted that he did not speak French, and for a city where roughly, I think, more than 70% of the population is Francophone, that was sort of a controversial hire. Cunningworth isn't with the club anymore, so it's not really an issue anymore, I suppose. But, you know, it's the team is such a huge part of the fabric and the culture and the history of Quebec and Montreal, and that culture and history is majority French speaking. So I don't think it's unreasonable to have at the very, you know, bilingual people at the helm of the Canadiens. But I guess the whole question is the balance. You know, at one point, you know, as long as it's not at the expense of the team, as long as the team's not cutting itself off from other potential hires over language, but it's a tough balance, I suppose. But it's understandable. I mean, you go into that dressing room after a game, there's a lot of press in there, and a lot of them are for French-speaking publications. A lot of the fans are French-speaking. I do think it's important, and not completely unacceptable to expect that element of the culture and the province is catered to a little bit.
So you're not, where are you based now?
I'm in New York now.
Okay. So is there...
Yeah, I've lived in New York for over a decade now. So.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah.
So is there a... I mean, there's got to be some kind of Canadians contingent there, though, too, right? Probably?
Oh, of course. I mean, they're everywhere, really. They really are everywhere. But, you know, New York is all expats anyway, so... It's not hard to find other, you know, Canadians who have moved to New York, Montrealers or Montreal fans. When you go to a game, Montreal playing against the Islanders on Long Island, and there are busloads of people coming down from Quebec to watch that game. I've been to games seeing them play against the Islanders on Long Island where it was practically a Canadian's home game, and they move in packs, definitely, the Canadian fans. You'll find them anywhere. You know, you find basically any Canadiens road game, you'll find at least a few people wearing the bleu, blanc, rouge, you know. And especially if you get to, you know, major cities like New York, Boston, L.A., Chicago, you know, where expats are more likely to go, you'll definitely notice a prominent Montreal contingent.
Yeah. Well, I think that's... my last question for you. What is the release date for the book in the U.S.?
It's out in, I believe, second or third week of September. It should be out in the United States. And it'll be out on, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and, all online retailers, as well as a number of different brick-and-mortar stores. And like I said, it just came out in Canada, and the response has been great so far. And I'm looking forward to seeing what more the response is. You know, it's dawning on me now. It's interesting. You know, I spent a lot of time working on the book, and it's starting to dawn on me now that I'll probably have to work just as hard, if not harder, to sell the thing as I did writing it. So, but I'm looking forward to it. It should be interesting. I think it's a story that, or stories that, even for people who are more casual sports fans, I think it will sort of appeal to them. I do think that these are sort of universal stories with a lot of crossover appeal.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well,
and I appreciate you kind of finding out about it and getting in touch, definitely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it. Thanks for taking the time to talk.
Oh, no problem, Matt. Thank you, and, you know, feel free to get in touch with any other questions if you need to.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.